Developments in the gay marriage battle. Will the state recognize couples who already tied the knot? The Department of Child Services is called a deadbeat parent. Two Indiana members of Congress put pressure on the VA, and crowdfunding and high-tech jobs come to Indiana. That plus soccer fever in Indy and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending on Independence Day 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, the governor has a decision to make regarding the same-sex marriages that took place in Indiana before a federal appeals court issued a stay. The federal government will recognize them, but it's up to Pence to decide if state government will also recognize them. It's a decision that can affect tax filing, job benefits, hospital visitation, and more. Governor Pence is researching what to do.
We're obtaining counsel from our general counsel's office as well as the attorney general to determine the right way forward and for the state of Indiana and for the programs in the state of Indiana, and we'll be making that decision and making that public in the days ahead. How I feel about the issue is really secondary to what the law requires.
Will the state recognize gay marriages? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, what will happen?
Well, I think the governor has a chance to do the right thing, and the right thing would be to recognize those marriages and give those individuals the same rights as any other married entity would have. And I'd like to think he'd do the right thing.
But I think it's not happened in other states.
It's not happened in other states, and I think with Mike Pence's eye on the national scene and the possibility of running for president and the right wing controlling the nominating process for the Republicans, I don't think it's likely to happen here either. But it would be the right thing to do.
Is it a difficult decision?
Well, sure it is, because it's a chaotic situation right now. The state law is what the state law is, and when the judge decided it was something different, and we had that period where we had people getting married in the state, and then the stay came up. Now those people are in limbo. I keep going back to thinking of the article that the Indianapolis Star did right after the decision was made, where the professor from IU Law School said, they probably shouldn't be getting married because they're going to be in the very situation that they're in now, and because they're going to be in limbo. And this thing is not going to be decided until the Supreme Court decides it, and that's more than a year away. At best, they'll take the argument this fall, then arguments will actually be made in the spring, and then maybe, if you're lucky, they'll decide by next June what's going to happen nationally. And between now and then, the governor will want to, he's going to follow the rule of law, but what that is, because of what's going on in 10 other states in the same situation, is very murky. And so I look for him to give us an answer what they're going to do here in Indiana sometime as early as maybe as next week.
In the meantime, an interesting development. The federal appeals court has said that Indiana must recognize the marriage of two women from Munster, Nikki Quasney and Amy Sandler. Quasney is suffering from cancer. Does that affect the big picture?
I think it probably is an indication, and I'm not very good at reading judicial tea leaves, but it's an indication that there is a sense that there is merit in their argument and the broader argument that's been advanced by other plaintiffs in the suit seeking recognition of same-sex marriage in Indiana. If you had the appellate court panel hell-bent, and again, talk about speculation, that's what this is worth, hell-bent against it, determined that this was going to be overturned, that Judge Young's decision was going to be overturned. I don't think you'd single out these individuals and these women in this case. So it is very much a wait and see. The law prof you mentioned, Mike, Steve Sanders, was one of my best buddies as an undergrad at IU, one of the smartest people I know on this subject, knows it probably better than anybody in the country. If he says wait and see, then yeah. I'm going to say I'll go with him, wait and see.
In the meantime, Attorney General Greg Zeller has been under some fire for appealing this, asking for the stay, and he's now published an editorial where he says that it's his duty, that nobody should read into this that he's bigoted or homophobic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not going to read into that because I don't know what is in his heart and in his mind in that regard, but as I said before, he had a choice. He could have decided not to pursue the appeal and to allow the judicial ruling have the effect. And so he is not duty-bound. I will object to that because he had a choice to make. The law had been enacted by the legislature, and a judge had determined that it was unconstitutional. At that point, he could have said, okay, we'll follow the court's direction, and he chose to appeal, which is within his right, but he had that choice.
That's right. He can't hide behind a duty. It is a choice, and he chose. He chose to take the intolerant position, and he, you know, he should be aware of that, and he should own up to it.
I disagree. He is duty bound to protect the laws that the legislature passed, and that's the way he sees it, and that's what he's doing. And he shouldn't read into it any personal feelings he has. He feels that's his responsibility to do that, and he did it, and he's trying to avoid chaos, not create it. And what you've got now because of that ruling is chaos for people
who
are there.
There would still be an appeal, and there would be a potential for chaos if the appeal overthrew the law.
And it would have gone longer, and you would have had more people in the state of flux than you have now.
But as we see, there's been an indication that won't be the result. So
yeah. Well, you would have had a lot more people in that same murky situation.
I disagree, Mike.
Well, you would have
one thing. One thing we can appreciate, though, perhaps, is the absence of sort of the bluster and bravado that we've seen in some other states. Now, granted, it's probably because both the governor and the AG, by training and by profession, are officers of the court and are bound by some constraints about what they can say about judges. But we have seen in other states sort of this: I don't care what those blankety-blank judges, activist judges, you know, bring it on.
You know,
thankfully, we haven't seen or heard any of that. It's all been very civilized in terms of the recognition of the court and the institution.
When we tear down traditions,
correct,
like
correct.
The court, like
correct.
The media, like all of these other things correct. That have existed for a long time and have been arbiters of what's fairness,
right.
Then we really run a risk of chaos.
And that hasn't happened here,
right.
which
and
I
the
appreciate.
Other, the other part of that, too, is if the legislature did its job better, both in Congress and at the state level, you wouldn't have to have so much activity. You know, your next question goes right to that. Goes right to that issue. If the legislature was giving oversight of the governor and the governor was acting responsibly, the courts wouldn't have to intervene.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. Last week's question was, should state officials drop the legal challenges to same-sex marriage? 93% said yes, 7% said no. This week's question is, if invited, would you attend the wedding of a same-sex couple? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, it depends on my schedule. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The Department of Child Services is getting hit with a huge lawsuit. The potential class action case claims more than 1,400 Hoosier families who adopted special needs children never received promised subsidies. Attorneys say the families were told they were put on a waiting list until funds became available, yet DCS has returned $240 million to the state's surplus since 2009. The lawsuit is asking for $100 million for the families who haven't seen a dime. Deborah Moss adopted three children.
We vote for these people to run these offices, and I was trusting these people to budget this money to get it to the appropriate places it belongs, and to find out they're returning it to the state to make the budget look good rather than to get it to the children that need it the most was heartbreaking.
Mike McDaniel, is that what's going on here?
This is a very complex situation because when the state of Indiana took over Department of Child Services, they found a real mess. I mean, the services statewide were very uneven. They were a judge in one county may rule that it costs so much to do this in Hamilton County versus so much in Noble County, and the services were completely uneven, and there was no rhyme or reason to what the budgets were going to be. And the state, when they took it over, to their credit, added more to this budget than has ever been there before. The services have been streamlined. It's so much better now. The Pew study says the services are 10 times better than what they were when they took this department over. And because of that, they reverted money in each of those years back to this. The legislature is the one that draws up this budget and determined that this particular program wasn't as necessary for cash because of all of the other services they're getting now that they never got before. And so that's what's going on here. And now you've got this lawsuit for these 1,400 families. The state distributes $90 million a year in state and federal money to adoptive families. And then last session, the Pence administration passed a $1,000 tax credit for these families, trying to do everything they can for these folks. Now, this lawsuit for $100 million, when the state distributes $90 million a year, I mean, it's a little over the top. And we'll see what happens on this one, but the services are so much better now than they were when they took this program over. It's unbelievable.
That's great.
That's
true.
This
is an absolute disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace. The money was appropriated for this. These people adopted special needs children who are very, very difficult to place. They're not getting rich off doing this. They were promised this additional funding, and they're not getting it. And they're not getting it simply so the bottom line looks better for Pence's presidential campaign.
That's not true.
And it's a disgrace.
Well, it looks like it started before he showed up.
Yeah.
Well, he continued it. It was appropriated, and it wasn't allocated.
Over 5 years, those reversions, not
right.
1 year.
Okay, that's right. Fine. It still was appropriated not allocated by this governor.
I don't want you to get confused with the facts on this, because it's spread out.
I don't want
time.
You to get confused about it either.
Well, I know about the
We've
program.
We've broken our contract with those
no,
families.
You did not.
Yes,
The law firm pursuing this is Cohen and Malad, the same law firm that was successful in suing the BMV.
I think they've identified what they think, and to this point have been successful in exploiting, is that difference that has been occurring. And Ann points it out, I think, very well. In the BMV case, we had a case of systematic overcharges. They figured that out, and they brought the case, and it was settled, and it's still being worked through, actually. But the problem that Ann points out that the state is, I think, going to have to face, and it looks like Cohen and Malad has sussed out, is that we appropriate a lot of money every year, but there's an expectation that a lot of that will come back in a reversion so that you have money going out that is never allocated. And so the intention, what they're getting to is, what is the intent of the legislature? Is the intent to spend that money, or is it just to put it there and spend it as needed? And that's one of the questions that's going to be asked and may affect how budgeting is done in Indiana.
I was just going to say, could this change the way the budget is written?
Absolutely. Certainly a lot of people who've had nothing to do with this issue have said that the whole notion of, you know, a budget not really being a budget needs to cease. That when the lawmakers who have the constitutional obligation to craft a spending plan for the biennium, it is what it is. And we've moved away from that as a state. But this one is interesting, and it is ironic, as Mike points out, that the governor has embraced the adoption as one of its real platform of his whole thrust. So I don't think he's probably thrilled. Clearly not thrilled. You don't want to be on the receiving end of a lawsuit. But it is ironic that that's been one of his pet issues.
Indiana Congresswoman Jackie Walorski says she plans to issue a report on her visit this week to the Veterans Hospital in Indianapolis. Walorski and fellow Congresswoman Susan Brooks were given a guided tour of the Rodebush VA Medical Center. A recent audit found that over the last 10 years, 173 patients fell through the cracks and never received an appointment there. New patients waited an average of 54 days for an appointment. Here's Representative Walorski.
This was one hospital that was flagged by the Inspector General, one of the 122 around the country that they needed some additional information. This is a facility where there were questions, and so I wanted to come here and meet the people face-to-face, meet the administrators face-to-face, the staff, more importantly, talk to the veterans.
John Ketzenberger, the hospital director, says that wait times are now 14 days or less. What, if anything, does that tell you?
Well, it tells me they recognize the problem and they're trying to address the problem, and so that's good. But the problem that the VA has, based on experiences elsewhere, not necessarily in Indianapolis, but elsewhere, is that they'll say something like that, and then they find out that that's not exactly right. Their credibility has suffered a lot, mainly because of what happened in Phoenix, for instance. And so I hope that's the case, and I hope that they get that waiting list down to 7 days or a few days, because, as we've said before, these folks deserve service, and they are. I hope they're moving in the right direction, but we just don't know because of the credibility problem for the VA overall.
You get the sense that visit was about Brooks and Walorski making inquiries or putting on pressure?
How about both? Because both have been involved in the issue. Walorski, because of her role on the Veterans Affairs Committee in the House, has been quite outspoken. In fact, we've talked about her outrage at some of the action or inaction within the administration and the agency in committee hearings in recent weeks and months. So it's not a newfound interest for her. So I think it's a little of both, a little fact-finding, a little pressure. And it makes sense. There's clearly a problem. It's not a debatable issue now whether there's a problem. Now that the administration has tapped a new, has a nominee to take over that position from the private sector with Procter & Gamble, longtime CEO, it is interesting how a lot of Republicans who have said this should be run more efficiently like a business, well, guess what?
Yeah.
That apparently
it's
is what's going to happen.
It's also an Indiana native. Some of the... I lost my train of thought there. I'm sorry.
I do that to people. I'm
sorry. Well, Walorski and Brooks going there, we're told that that things have gone well, but one of the big problems in the VA scandal is bonuses that have been given to some of the higher-ups, and there's information coming out regarding bonuses in Indianapolis. Is the heat going to get turned up higher there?
Sure. I mean, look, the more publicity this problem gets, the more likely it's going to get fixed. Republicans and Democrats alike in Congress want to have this solved because it's not right to have veterans not get the services they need. And I hate to admit this, but John McCain had it right, and I'm not the world's biggest John McCain fan, but I can tell you this. He had it right when he said, if you're a veteran, you have a card that says you're a veteran, you should be able to go anywhere in America to any health provider and get the services you want. And that would eliminate wait times and everything that goes with this system that we have that's not prepared to deal with the volume that is increasing and is also increasing as we speak as people come back from the other wars. So it's a situation where we need to just realize that veterans ought to have services anywhere they want to go, anytime they want to have it, and so you eliminate the system altogether and go to that.
Well, I agree they ought to have the services. The problem with if you eliminate the VA, it doesn't eliminate the problem because the average wait time to see an internist in Massachusetts, which has more doctors per capita than any state, is 50 days. And for a general practitioner is 39 because we're hundreds of thousands of dollars short, not dollars,
doctors
but
short.
Doctors short
and
primary
doctors,
care
yeah.
physicians.
Yeah.
And the other problem that the VA has is they underpay these doctors.
Sure.
So they're 400 short on the VA alone and nurses on top of that. So when somebody spends, as these guys do, $150,000 to $200,000 and forego income for 4 years, they need to make it back. We need to pay them. We need to give incentives to doctors to go to primary care. And I hope that the visit from Jackie Walorski will get her to realize that she just can't rant and rave. She has to put money where her mouth is. And that includes voting the next time in favor of reducing the gridlock at the VA, which she voted against in 2013. And I think it's important to realize that here there's been no allegation in Indianapolis
right.
about the books being cooked. That's important. And they've gotten one of the – there are only three winners of the brass ring or the brass shield for VA hospitals in the country, and this is one of them. And they've been recognized as for their quality care by other associations, and they're the only VA hospital that's been so recognized.
You know, and I agree with that, Ann. I think what my point was is that they suffer from the credibility
oh, sure.
gap of the
well,
VA.
They were on the red flag list. I'm not sure why. But because we've always felt that the services were good here, but, you know, because they were on that list, I think it's why they got the visit.
I think the reason they were on the list is because of the volume increase and their inability to hire additional personnel means the wait time is there. But we have to recognize that as a country, we need to do something about the doctor shortage. Just right. giving them a card is not going to get them into a family practice.
But it would disperse them over the entire system immediately and eliminate all of the wait times.
It would probably crash the overall system.
Moving on.
Yeah, it might. Exactly.
There are new rules in place for business owners in Indiana who hope to use internet crowdfunding to raise money from investors. Secretary of State Connie Lawson spelled out the rules this week at the Speakeasy in Broad Ripple. That's a community center for entrepreneurs where members share ideas and strategies. The crowdfunding rules allow a registered company to raise up to $2 million. It's intended to help out startups as well as existing companies. Here is Secretary Lawson.
Now, anyone can invest up to $5,000 in an Indiana-based offer. Previously, only relatively wealthy people who qualified as an accredited investor could buy shares of companies not listed on a public stock exchange.
John Schwanis, will that sort of thing make a difference for Connie Lawson in the race for Secretary of State?
She's getting attention. Name ID is important, so it doesn't hurt. The question is, how effective can this be? Obviously, this is designed to bring the state regulatory structure in line with not only state legislation but also federal mandates. The question is, how effective? Because we all know the internet is still the wild, wild west to a large degree. Yeah. And even though you have the best intentions, you have to be a Hoosier to invest, you have to be a company.
Registered
the World Wide Web doesn't really recognize state borders very well or national borders, and so good luck trying to enforce it.
Well, this is a big switch. It's a change in the way people can do business because of the internet, and Connie Lawson says because of the transparency that exists because of the internet.
Well, yes, there is transparency, but there are ways to exploit that transparency, and there are also ways to exploit the people who are trying to do the good things that this might provide and promote. So I hope that the regulatory regime is robust enough to make sure that people don't get burned, because this will become a very bad story for her if we hear about people who have lost a lot of money because of the way it goes. John's exactly right. This is a very volatile atmosphere, especially for investment, and so beware. I hope it works, but beware.
Is there the potential here to stimulate the economy?
There is, and I think that partially because of my husband's amendments, this bill has some safeguards in it. You can't take it out of your 401k, for example, and you're limited to $5,000, so that presumably the people who invest the $5,000, if they lose it, which is the way they ought to invest it, with the assumption they're going to lose it, it would not affect their lifestyle at all. But the potential's still there, because they could invest $5,000 in 10 or 15 or 20 of these, and it might make a difference. So it's anytime you're in a not publicly traded company like that, you've got to assume that it's a very risky investment, and you should only do it if you can afford to lose whatever you're investing.
Crowdfunding, does that sound like a way to start a business?
Well, for small businesses, it may be the only way to start businesses. And the legislature was smart to pass this legislation last session. They assigned this responsibility to her because these things take place in that office. They were very Johnny on the spot to get it done before the July 1st start of the law taking effect, and that was hard to do when you think of the time frame they had. But in that news conference, I'll give her credit, and this goes to what John said, they gave a precautionary point, you got to beware of what you're doing here and do your homework, and they're going to be as aggressive on fraud as this as they have been on other things, and they've been very aggressive on fraud.
Being somewhat facetious, but this now officially makes crowdfunding online more regulated than campaign contributions, I think. Maybe that's...
All right. Finally, the U.S. was eliminated from World Cup competition this week, but you can tell that the fan base for soccer is growing here in Indiana by the huge crowd that gathered on Massachusetts Avenue to watch the game between the U.S. and Belgium. The crowd was estimated at close to 7,000 people who watched the Americans go down to defeat 2-1. Some people skipped out on work to join the party. And Delaney,
Were most of those people soccer fans or party goers?
Probably a little bit of both. I mean, it was obviously exciting. I even watched part of the game, which is not something I ordinarily do, and it's good that they're building a base here. It's a, you know, an international sport that the U.S. has really been lagging behind the rest of the country, rest of the world in, so it's good.
And the World Cup happens every 4 years, and it has never gotten the kind of attention it got this time. Is soccer on the rise?
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it, and I think the having Indy 11 here has been a major thing to help.
They've
even
made
boost
that party
it even
happen.
More.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's great. It's great to have that many people involved.
Yeah. Much more
now, if they just win
cricket.
A game.
Then what?
If the Indy 11 could just win a game.
I know they're tied. They're, you know.
Well, that's like most of the games.
Yeah. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.